And welcome back. You're tuned in to Fired Up with Steve, WJMS Radio's political talk show. And I'd like to thank you for tuning in. And we've got a busy show, so we're going to jump right in and start unpacking things. Well, I got to tell you, this past week was jam-packed of things for us to talk about, and things that happened this week in Washington were just totally off the hook, starting out with the conclusion of the impeachment trial that we've been talking about for the past month and beyond that, probably a year. And as expected, the president was not convicted on any of the articles of impeachment. The vote went along party lines, with the exception of Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, who voted to convict on one of the articles. So even though the president was acquitted of both articles, it was not a totally party line. There was some bipartisan participation. And we're going to talk a little bit about Mitt Romney and the other senators a little further along in the segment. But, you know, we also had last Tuesday was the president's State of the Union address. And, you know, I don't know what your impression of it was, but I really did not think that I was listening to a report from the president to Congress on the State of the Union so much as we were listening to a TV variety show with many different acts presented, not as a way to advance a political agenda so much as really to kind of show off the magnanimous nature, can I say that, of our president. There were several segments where, you know, he highlighted, as most presidents have done in the recent history of the State of the Union, important people and visitors and guests that illustrate points in his speech that he wants to emphasize. And one point, he identified and acknowledged a young black student and her mother, and, you know, as part of, you know, showing his, quote, generosity, close quote, he, you know, explained their story and then gave her a school scholarship that, you know, will help her with her education. There were other individuals who were singled out. Another was a case where a gentleman had been murdered by a, again, air quotes, illegal immigrant, close quotes, and he recognized that and honored him with his brother present in the gallery. And then probably the high point of the State of the Union show was President Trump gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is our country's highest civilian honor, to Rush Limbaugh, the controversial conservative talk show host, longtime Trump friend and supporter, co-early adopter in the Trump birther, I don't know what you want to call it, the birther quote movement, that marked the beginning of his campaign for the presidency. Basically, you know, the idea that former President Obama was not born in this country, therefore he was not eligible to be president, therefore his presidency should be declared illegitimate, etc., etc., and so on. You know, think of that what you will. The Presidential Medal of Freedom has been given to people who exemplify the highest ideals of our country, and, you know, by extension, the highest ideals of democracy and freedom around the world. They've included such people as Mother Teresa, Bishop Desmond Tutu, you know, a whole raft of people, you know, who have received this medal based on the services or their contributions to the advancement of the core principles of the United States of America as far as democracy and freedom go. And, you know, you can at me if you want. Rush Limbaugh doesn't fit in that category by any definition that I can think of. I'm sorry, I just don't see it. So, you know, it really was a spectacle. It was marked very pointedly by, you know, overwhelming standing ovations and applause from the Republicans in the chamber, with absolute crickets from the Democrats in the chamber, with the exception of at one point where the president acknowledged the new president of Venezuela, where, you know, that was given a bipartisan standing ovation, as it should have been. You know, recognition of a newly elected head of state always warrants the full support of the American government and people, particularly when this new head is one who is advancing democratic principles in that country. So in that regard, you know, both Democrats and Republicans gave a standing ovation. The speech show was marked at several other points. At the end, the president did something that is typically not done by presidents. He made it a point to go over and shake the hands of the two Supreme Court justices that he has appointed to the court. That's usually something that's not done. The Supreme Court justices sit throughout the whole speech. They do not stand, they do not applaud, they do not react. They are there representing the judicial branch, which is by definition supposed to be a nonpartisan entity. Therefore, they do not, you know, react to purely partisan or political elements of the speech. In addition, the speech, and there has been a firestorm of controversy around this. One of the things that all presidents do when they give their State of the Union speech is they give a printed copy of it to both the Vice President, who is the President of the Senate, and to the Speaker of the House, who is the leader of the House of Representatives. They each get a courtesy copy of the speech. In this case, you know, he gave the speech to Vice President Spence, and he gave a copy of the speech to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. And at the end of the speech, Nancy Pelosi, in putting a visual point on her disapproval of the speech and her disagreement with the president, very ceremoniously tore the document up at the dais and left it on the dais at the conclusion of the president's speech. Now, you know, there are a whole lot of pundits and talk shows and commentators who are, you know, taking upset with that, saying that it was inappropriate. And there are others that were applauding, you know, her doing something that she could do to voice her opinion of the president's speech. I think, you know, given what the speech said, and I listened to it in its entirety, I think, you know, it was not an inappropriate gesture. It's clear that there are deep divisions between the parties in our government. The things that the president said and elements of, you know, what's happening in our country today that he is taking credit for that actually can be traced back to the prior administration. And the fact that he called out and threw under the bus on several occasions the prior administration, you know, it just showed just how petty this president can be when he puts his mind to it. Now, on the plus side, if you could find a plus, he didn't mention the impeachment. He didn't talk about, you know, any of the controversy that's been swirling around his office for the past 3 years. Okay, that's good. You know, he tried to make it a speech that follows State of the Union sort of precedent in talking about how the economy is doing and how jobs are doing and, you know, things in his agenda that he would like Congress to take up. One of them that he made a very strong point to emphasize, that if Congress got a bill on his desk to control and reduce drug prices, he would sign it into law immediately. At that point, the Democratic side of the House began chanting H.R. 3, which is a bipartisan bill that is, you know, supported by both parties in Congress that the House has passed that is sitting on the desk of Mitch McConnell, who is the leader of the Senate and has been sitting on the desk since January, that bill is already there and is already ready for his signature. All Senate has to do is pass it and get it to the president, and if he's, you know, says he'll do what he says he'll do, he'll sign it. So there was a little bit of controversy there. All in all, you know, it was painful to see, you know, what he has done to the dignity of the State of the Union address. And it just is another point to show, you know, that this president just has his own way of thinking about how his job works. And in most cases, how he thinks it works does not fit with how both the Constitution and our laws and precedent and history say that it fits. Now, the following day, after the State of the Union address, of course, the Senate took its final vote on whether to convict or acquit the president on the two articles of impeachment that had been handed over from the House of Representatives. And, you know, as we've said before, all of the expectation was that this was going to go along party lines and that the president was going to be acquitted. And in fact, that is exactly what happened, with the exception, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, of Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, who voted in favor of conviction on the second article of impeachment, based on, you know, a matter of conscience and keeping faith with his religious beliefs. And, you know, he has since then gotten just a tsunami of backlash from Republicans, both in government or in the House and Senate, to be specific, and, you know, Republican media, conservative media, all have excoriated him for voting against the president. He has been disinvited from the CPAC convention. They're telling him he's got to turn in his conservative card. And, you know, like I said, it is unfortunate that he was the only one to stand on his convictions when, during the course of the impeachment, various news sources, you know, from either side of the political spectrum, you know, MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, you know, all of them, Huffington Post, New York Times, Washington Post, all of them were interviewing senators who said, you know, during the course of the trial, that they thought what the president did was wrong, but that they were not going to vote to convict him of the article or articles of impeachment, even though they said what he did was, you know, everything from inappropriate to illegal. They were not going to convict him, and they didn't. You know, for whatever reason, and you can speculate about, you know, what kind of strong arm was applied to them, whether it was, you know, anybody that voted against the president would be primaried in the upcoming elections, you know, or, you know, their sources or access to funding would be eliminated or severely restricted. Whatever the leverage that was applied, apparently was extremely effective, because, you know, all but one of the Republican senators stood with the president, even though there were at least, by my count, a half a dozen or more who had said that what they thought the president did was wrong, yet they were not going to impeach him and remove him from office because of it. So, you know, there you have it. I think, as I said last week, both sides of this impeachment process, in fact, both sides of this investigation process, going back to the Mueller report, both sides of Congress, House and Senate, failed us, the people, failed us. They did not do what we sent them to office to do, is work on behalf of the people on what is right for us. They worked to protect their chances at re-election. They work to protect their access and sources for funding for their campaigns. They basically played a game, and we the people lost. So, you know, you can read that as you will. You know, and if you doubt my word, I absolutely encourage you, as I always say, go do your own research. Go out, find many sources, read up, find out what the truth is, look and see what was said, review the testimony. You know, if you did not listen to a lot of the impeachment hearings in the House, you know, it's the majority of the country has never read the Mueller report. If you have not given that attention, do yourself a favor, dig into it, and then, you know, come back with your opinions. If after all of that, you are still a staunch supporter of the president, more power to you. If you review it and it just makes you more and more opposed to what this president is doing, more power to you as well. But don't just go by what one, you know, pundit source or one news source is telling you on either side. Do your own investigation. Do your own research. Find out for yourselves. It is important that you understand what is going on in Washington, what is being done, and, you know, what the outcomes of all of this are going to be. And if you think that it hasn't started yet, I've got a couple of news flashes for you. So that was Wednesday. The day after that, the president's attorney general, William Barr, made an announcement and sent out a memorandum of process to the FBI, where he has directed the FBI to get his express written approval before investigating any 2020 presidential candidates, any of the president, the vice president, or any of their staff, people that work in the White House, anyone associated with the president that the FBI is being asked to investigate. Now, that investigation will not happen until William Barr says that it may happen. Let that sink in for a second. So from being an independent investigative arm of the federal government, the FBI is now been put on a leash, held firmly in the hand of the Attorney General, who is also supposed to be an independent law enforcement entity in this country. So, you know, it seems, and by all appearances, is that the control of our Justice Department is now being held in the hand of the President of the United States. And remember, you know, with this overturned articles of impeachment, the ability of Congress to exercise its oversight duty and, you know, review the actions of the president and other elected officials, specifically where it comes to, you know, requesting or subpoenaing documents or subpoenaing witnesses to testify, all of that is now been very much weakened, if not eliminated in its entirety. The precedent has been set for a future president of either party, if, you know, they are accused of something and the House committees or the Senate committees are reaching out to the White House for information or documents, or, you know, some of the president's people are being subpoenaed to testify as witnesses, that now they can, at the order of the president, be told not to comply with a lawfully issued subpoena. Both the House and Senate committees have subpoena power. Under the Constitution, they have the power to subpoena people, to subpoena witnesses, documents, whatever they need in the course of a duly authorized investigation. That ability has been severely restricted, as I said, if not eliminated altogether. So, you know, that should give anyone some concern, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. You know, you should be concerned that there is little oversight to prevent abuse of power, criminal activities, or anything that would normally fall under the jurisdiction or oversight of the Congress. And remember, there are three co-equal branches of government. The legislative branch is explicitly empowered to act as a check and balance on the executive branch. It is written in black and white in the Constitution. That is part of their job, is to provide oversight into the activities of the president, to, as the founding fathers articulated, their fear was of an imperial president, aka a king. And the idea of the legislature was to be a check on that power so that we would not have an imperial president, a president who believed themselves to be above the law or able to do, you know, whatever they want. Sound familiar? You know, and that power has been severely eroded under this president. And, you know, if, as many people are predicting, you know, whether you believe it or not, whether you think it will happen or not, there is a possibility that this president will be reelected, and we will have four more years, during which time he could possibly do even more damage to our system of government through, you know, similar acts to, you know, what he was accused of in the impeachments, you know, the other things that are going on, you know, all of these things that have transpired over the first 3 years of his presidency. There could be four more years, you know, starting in 2021 of the same thing or worse. And the ability of Congress to exercise its duty of oversight has been severely restricted. So, you know, you may be a supporter of this president. If you are, okay, more power to you. But at the end of the day, if this president is running unchecked, he is going to do things that are going to impact all of us. And I'll give you an example. In his upcoming budget that will be coming out over the next few days, he's going to make drastic cuts to Medicare, to Medicaid, to food assistance programs, to several other programs that will impact drastically more white people than they will people of color. Because, you know, the truth of the matter is, when you look at Medicare, Medicaid, when you look at food stamps, when you look at welfare, when you look at any of the social safety net programs, the majority of recipients are not people of color. The majority of the recipients are white people in this country, poor white people. And they are going to suffer just as much, if not more, as people of color in this country, simply because of their numerical majority of those people who participate in those programs. So, you know, it isn't, you know, if you believe that he's doing this because those people of color are abusing the system and this, that, and the other thing, got a newsflash. They are not the largest chunk of the recipients of those programs. So it is going to impact the people who believe that it's going to impact somebody else. You're going to get impacted. So in addition to what I just spoke about with Attorney General Barr, President Trump also, within a couple of days of the vote of acquittal, escorted Colonel Vindman and his twin brother, and you may remember them as the highly decorated Army colonel who testified in the House impeachment hearings. President Trump had him escorted out of the building and fired from his position, out of the White House. He also recalled our ambassador to the European Union, Ambassador Sondland, and fired him on the spot as soon as he returned to Washington as well. And news reports have it that there are other people who are in jeopardy of being removed from their positions because they testified against the president, or they provided information or documents or anything else that was used as part of the investigation into either the Mueller report or the impeachment. So there is very much a vendetta, or what looks like a vendetta, going on, being led by the White House against people who are, you know, perceived to be their enemies. And, you know, look back in history. This is not the first time that, you know, there's been a, quote, list of enemies, close quote. Richard Nixon had a list of people who were on his enemies list. You know, there are precedents for using the power of the president's office to go after your political opponents, going back through history. So this is nothing new. It's just the latest version of it. There, you know, there potentially can be a lot more. You know, this president now believes that he has the authority, and, you know, no one, he is accountable to no one to do just about anything that he wants to do. This is what he believes. And, you know, that should be a concern to every American, because, as I said, it is not just about, you know, one group going out after, you know, minorities or, you know, disenfranchised people. The effects of these policies are going to be widespread, and they are going to go up and down the spectrum across all of the color barriers in our country. And that's just the plain truth of it. So, you know, we need to be concerned. We need to be paying attention. We need to get involved and get engaged and, you know, exercise our authority over the government to try and bring this to a stop. When we come to the, you know, the call to action segment, we'll dig into this in a little more detail, because I have a few things to say about that specifically. But right now, we'll pause it here. We'll take our first break, maybe, you know, lighten the mood with a little bit of music, or not. But in any event, we'll come back after the break and we'll pick up our second topic for the show. You're listening to WJMS Radio. This is the show Fired Up, and your host, this is Steve. We'll see you right back after the break. Don't go away.
Hands, 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 hands up. If you a survivor, hands, 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 hands up. If you a survivor,
look, I'm feeling greater than ever. I'm a survivor, the devil's a liar. I told you I was gonna get better. I've been through the fire, now I'm up higher. They bet against me, but I am here. I am my strongest when I have no fear. I felt pain until my eyes shed tears. Now I am back and my mission's so clear. You can't break down what you can't take down. This is my day now, I see through the fake now. I am a champion, I am doing what they said just can't be done. Feel my energy rise over time, I get stronger. Breaking the time, I survive to live longer. This is my testament, the best is yet to come. And I'll never
I'm
be done.
Than yeah. Ever, ever. Once I spread my wings, I'm gonna fly. Whoa, whoa, I'll fall again. Never, ever. I will tell the world that I survived. Whoa, and now I'm way up,
way up, way up. Way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up.
It took a lot of courage to believe that I would make it right where I stand. So right here in this moment, I'm gonna own it, that is my plan. From the lowest point of the valley and land to the highest point of the mountain, I can prove to the world that I can't be broken. For everyone feeling hopeless, I am the spokesman. I made it, we made it. You can't fade what can't be faded. I never gave up on myself. I feel it in my soul, I'm the greatest. Make the energy rise to get stronger. I survive to live longer. This is my testament, the best is yet to come. And I'll never
I'm
be
better
done.
Than yeah. Ever, ever. Once I spread my wings, I'm gonna fly.
Way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up.
Do you know what we came for? We came to celebrate. We came to celebrate. We came to celebrate. Do you know what we came for? We came to celebrate. We came to celebrate. We came to celebrate.
Put your hands
way up.
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 Put your hands
'cause we came to celebrate.
Put your hands
way up.
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 I'm better than ever, ever. Once I spread my wings, I'm gonna fly.
Way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
way up,
and now I'm way up.
This song was inspired by the beautiful people over at Pink the Runway and the amazing movement that they are standing behind. Fighting for a vision, and also the millions and millions of people who fight every day to survive, no matter what it is. Claim your victory, stand tall, be proud. You're a survivor, you're a warrior, you're amazing.
And we're back. Welcome back to Fire It Up. This is Steve, your host, and we're going to get right back into it. We've talked before about the democratic election process that's been going on, and frankly, I'm not a huge fan of the way the Democratic National Committee has constructed the debate formats that we've been seeing over the course of the election. It is, you know, unfortunate that they are tying participation in the televised debates, where, you know, a mega amount of exposure is available to the candidates, to, you know, how much money they've raised and how many polls they've gotten above a certain percentage in, and all of these rules. I think, you know, as we go forward, once we get past this election cycle, one of the things that is going to need to be worked on, and hopefully whoever, if it's a Democrat, whoever takes over the White House and becomes the de facto leader of the Democratic Party, is going to institute some investigation. Well, investigation is not the right word. It's going to, you know, institute a process to look at how the election process is structured and what could be done to make it better. I've been listening to a lot of discussion over the course of the weeks about the debates and about the practices and the selection criteria and all of that. And for the most part, the reviews have not been all that favorable. One of the things that bothers me the most is that the candidates that had positions that were most beneficial to disenfranchised people, to poor people, and to people of color in this country are, you know, by and large, no longer in the running. Over the course of the last 4 or 5 months, you know, Kamala Harris dropped out, and Julian Castro dropped out, and, you know, several other candidates have left the race primarily because they did not have the money to continue. And I think part of the problem with our political system is that, you know, money plays such an oversized role in how we are presented with the candidates for us to choose from in order to proceed on to the elections for ultimate selection, you know, as the nominee and hopefully, you know, as the eventual winner of the races. And this is not only true at the federal level, this is true all the way down the ticket. You know, there are candidates for state, local, statewide offices, you know, across the country who really cannot afford to compete effectively because of the oversized role that money plays. And I am of the opinion that there's got to be a better way, number one. And perhaps it is that, you know, the respective national committees, both Democrat and Republican, should be the clearinghouse for campaign funding that could go equally to all of the candidates. You know, it's a long process that is going to require a lot of thought and a lot of effort. But I am a firm believer that there's a better way out there and we need to find it. The other thing I think is, and I heard this mentioned by one of the national talk shows, where they were talking about, you know, the Democrats need to adopt what's called a 50-state strategy in order to better win the election. Well, you know, I disagree with that in some form. And, you know, if you feel otherwise, please send me an email at firedupradio@yahoo.com. And let me know what you think. You know, should there be a different process for electing or for campaigns to present us with the candidates for us to elect into office? You know, let me know what you think. But, you know, getting back to it, there's got to be a better way. Right now, you know, we are the victims of the information that come out in polls. We go by, you know, now that we have completed the Iowa caucuses, and I'm going to talk about that in a second because that was a total cluster. You know, now each subsequent primary just tends to, you know, show us who is a, quote, so-called front runner, you know, or who is at, you know, the top of the selection list just by how they performed in the primary, which is governed by how much money they spent, which is governed by how well they did in the previous primary, and so on and so on and so on. There has to be a better way for us to be presented with a slate of candidates. And, you know, the fact that there are 12, 14, 16, 18 of them, you know, that maybe that's a little bit much. I don't know. But I think the more candidates we have, the more opportunities we get for a fuller discussion of ideas that reflect the broad spectrum of people in this country, rather than, you know, a condensed, boiled down, you know, constricted collection of platforms that do not necessarily represent a broad collection of the United States. And to touch back on polls for a second, and I did a show where we talked about polling. Something to keep in mind, when you hear discussions coming out of mainstream media or wherever you get your information sources from, you know, frequently they will mention who scored what in the latest whichever poll. Keep in mind a couple of points. Number one, polls are done on the basis of, you know, 500, 1,000, 2,000, maybe 5,000 people for a national level well-funded poll. There are 154 million registered voters in this country across all parties. So those 5,000 people, scientifically, statistically weighted, and all of the math that may be, still represent a minute fraction of the people that are out there. So when you hear polls and you know, for the sake of example, Republican or conservative polls show that, you know, 80% of Republicans support the president. Well, that could be 80% of 2,000 people, which would be 1,600 people, which they are saying represent 80% of the 42 million registered Republicans in the country. So take those numbers, percentage numbers, with a grain of salt. I'm going to give you some statistics on registered voters in this country. I did some research and found out that as of 2018, there were approximately 153,070,000 registered voters in the country. Now, remember, we're a country of, 332 million people, give or take a couple. So of the people who are voting age, 153,070,000 of them are registered to vote. The latest poll numbers that I saw, which came from the Pew Foundation, which is a nationally recognized polling source, showed that Republican and Democrats were almost even at about 40 to 41 million voters, registered voters each, representing 26 and 27% of the total, respectively. Now, independents, which collects all the other registered voters of other parties, both independent, communist, green party, et cetera, they are at 45% of the registered voters and about 68.9 million overall. So both Republicans and Democrats are less of the number of voters than are independents. So what that tells us is that there is a lot of people out there who don't coalesce or don't collect under the Republican banner, don't collect under the Democratic banner, and, you know, probably not until they go into the voting booth and punch that dot or pull that lever or fill in that circle or whatever you do, you know, inside your particular polling place, that is when they will either go Republican or Democrat. So, you know, when you look at strategy, you need to understand that the ultimate winner will be the party that best captures their own voters plus the significant portion of those independents. And that's the battleground. That's where both parties are fighting to win the hearts and minds. But just remember, percentages are dimensionless numbers. They merely reflect a collection of something into one group or another. If you take those numbers, keep in mind that they are a small slice of the overall electorate, but multiply those by the, you know, the 40 and 41 million I told you about, gives you a better sense of how many actual people they're talking about. So just keep that little factoid in mind as you listen to polls. Judge them with a grain of salt. The second point I want to make is this notion of, you know, and another discussion that's being had, and in light of what's going on in, you know, the last few election cycles, and as we've talked about with, you know, the execution of the Southern strategy by conservatives, voter suppression tactics that have been going on across the country, all kinds of tactics being used to disenfranchise people, that, you know, it is all about a game of numbers. It is all about trying to mitigate or control the number of people who will be eligible to vote. And again, this is primarily in the Democratic Party, because, you know, Democrats have a slight numerical advantage over Republicans, but you know, any little advantage they can generate helps. So whenever you hear, you know, of how popular the president is with his base, think back to this. Remember what I said, that it is a small segment, and the base that is most loyal to the president is a subset of that 40-something million, you know, and depending on whose numbers you look at, it's anywhere from 28 to 36 million people that are, you know, fanatically loyal to the president. And just remember that those are the targets that, you know, need to be aimed at. So, you know, as we're going to talk in our call to action segment, you know, we need to be focused on voter turnout. We need to be focused on being prepared to overcome any roadblocks or obstacles put in our way to try and keep us from exercising that right to vote. So moving along from that, as I said, you know, we have as of the airing of this show, we will be one day away from the Democratic primary in New Hampshire, and 1 week away from the conclusion of the Iowa caucuses, which ended up being really, really jacked up because of a failure of a software program that was being used to collect and tabulate the votes that were collected in all of the precincts in Iowa. Apparently, this app just totally broke down. It failed. And there wasn't an adequate backup system in order to be able to effectively and quickly count up the votes in order to get the totals necessary. And it ended up taking more than a week for the results of the Iowa caucuses to become official, to become known. And, you know, that, of course, has been, you know, the absolute centerpiece of late night humor and everybody's commentary, just how badly that software program, you know, failed, to the point where the Democratic National Committee has removed it from use for the Nevada caucuses, which will happen in a couple of weeks. They are not going to use that system. Kudos to them for catching that. You know, and it just goes to further reinforce the concerns that are out there with the integrity of our voting system. You know, we had in 2016, you know, the idea and notion that foreign government had interfered in our election and had actually managed to get into some voting systems, you know, at the state levels and you know, had some level of impact there. And all of that serves to undermine people's confidence that if they go and vote, their vote's going to be counted. And that in turn ends up driving the number of people who don't go and vote. So first thing to say is vote. Go and vote. You know, we'll deal with, you know, any confusion or whatever, but get your vote in and make sure that your vote is registered. You got to make sure that you do that. You know, in addition, as I said, New Hampshire's primary is on the date of this show will air. It will be tomorrow. And, you know, we will see who comes out of New Hampshire as the leader and then rolls on to, I believe it's South Dakota. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, we're going to have what's known as Super Tuesday, where a whole bunch of states have their elections, their primaries on the same day. And usually by the time Super Tuesday rolls around, we then will see a clear front runner. The one who has won the most primaries, has the most delegates under their belt, and the dynamic of the campaigns will change. We may see some people drop out. You know, there will be some dynamic shift in how the process continues. Now, another little piece that plays into this is we have Mike Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City, who is super wealthy. He's a multi-billionaire. Super Tuesday is going to be his first appearance on ballots. So that will also get added in to see how he fares against the candidates that have been running, you know, through the normal process for more than a year now. So that's going to be an interesting piece, and we will keep an eye on that, and we will have discussion on that once the dust settles on Super Tuesday to see what the impact of this late arrival with plenty of money to spend on advertising and ground game and all of that. Early indications are that he is actually already having an impact. But we will see what happens, because Super Tuesday will be his first official electoral test. So that will be interesting to see. So, you know, it like I said, it has been just a fascinating political week. For those of you who are, you know, political nerds like myself and history nerds, it has been, you know, something quite interesting to watch and listen to over the course of time. Going to take another real quick break here. When we come back, we'll jump into our call to action segment, as we do each show, where I give you some things that you specifically can do to affect and become and create the change you want to see. So we'll be right back after the break. You're listening to Fire It Up. This is your man, Steve. I'm the host. You're here on WJMSradio.com. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back after the break.
If you hear this message, wherever you stand, I'm calling every woman, calling every man. We're the generation, we can't afford to wait. The future started yesterday, and we're already late. We've been looking for a song to sing. We search for a melody, search for someone to lead. We've been looking for the world to change. Feel the same, then go on and say, if you're out there, sing along with me. If you're out there, I'm dying to believe that you're out there. Stand up and say it loud. If you're out there, tomorrow's starting now. Broken promises, no more call to war, unless it's love and peace that we're really fighting for. We can destroy hunger, we can conquer hate. Put down the arms and raise your voice, we're joining hands today.
I was looking for a song to sing.
Search for a leader, but the leader was me. Out there, sing along with me.
message wherever you stand. I'm calling every woman, calling every man. We're the generation that can't afford to wait. The future started yesterday, and we're already late.
And welcome back to our call to action segment here on Fire It Up, only on WJMSradio.com. So, we've had a busy political week, and we are now fully engaged in the Democratic primary season. As I said, as of the airing of this show, the New Hampshire primary will be tomorrow, followed up by, I believe, South Dakota, and then we move on from there. And, you know, this gives us an action item that we can do. Number one, for the candidates that are out there, Democrat and Republican, because there are some people running against the president, find out who they are, find out what their message is, what their platforms are. Get informed. As I always say, you need to be informed. You need to be educated. You need to dig deeper. You need to dig wider. You need to get all the facts to help you make an informed decision. Don't just listen to one source of information. Don't let that be your guide. Listen to a wide variety of sources. One of the things that I do on a regular basis is that I listen across the spectrum, both conservative and liberal, progressive sources. I get as much information as I can about what's going on, and that just helps shape what I bring to you each week. So, you know, you need to do the same thing. You need to make sure that you are being informed, that you are engaged with the process. As always, make sure that you're aware of what elections are coming up in your area. Yes, the November election is coming. That's in November. But there are many states that are having special elections for Congress seats or other seats that are vacant. There are local elections that may be happening. There are local initiatives that may be voted on. Make sure you're informed about what's going on in your area and that you get out and vote for those as well, because the numbers in those local races count greatly. A lot of times, a lot of decisions made on where money gets allocated, where resources get allocated, are based on how many people voted out of a particular district in your area. So make sure that you're engaged with that. Also, make sure that you are communicating with those candidates that seem to be saying what you think, seem to be in agreement with your views. Communicate to them. Find out where they stand on issues. Ask them questions. Go to their meetings. Donate to them. You know, all campaigns run on money. So make sure that, you know, if you can, donate money to the candidates. It can just be $5. But make sure that the candidates know that you are out there, that you are engaged with them, that you're listening to them, that you want to hear what they have to say, and you want to give them your ideas. This is what will go into helping to shape their platform and their process, and also let them know and remind them, as we say here on Fired Up all the time, they work for us. So we've got to make sure that they know that we're watching, that we're holding them accountable. The next thing is there's a very important thing coming, and it will be coming within the next few weeks. Every household in America will be receiving a mailer from the U.S. government regarding the census. I cannot stress this enough. We need to make sure that every resident in this country, everyone living in this country, is accurately counted in the census. The best way to make sure that your information gets counted is when you get that card, follow the instructions, and get your information in as quickly as possible. Now, you can respond via the mailer that they send you. You can respond over the phone. There'll be a toll-free number. There'll be multiple languages. I believe there are a total of 12 different languages that are available in the phone and in the information. So you can request information in your native language. There will also be online access to the census where you can fill out the form online. They have a version set up for people who are hearing impaired where there is a video with an individual who is giving the census questions by American Sign Language. There are all kinds of ways to respond to the census. There really is nothing keeping you from responding to that census. Please keep in mind, the census is an individual blind count. The cards will come mailed to residents of, you know, household at your address. It is not tied to you in any way, shape, or form, and it is also not allowed by law for any of that data to be tracked back to any individual or group of individuals. It is merely a blind count of how many people live and reside in this country. And this is critically important. Not only does the census shape how many representative seats in the U.S. House of Representatives will be allocated in what's called reapportionment, but it also determines the amount of federal dollars that go into communities for things like new schools, road repairs, healthcare systems, public transportation. All of these elements are tied to how many people are counted in a given district. So it is vitally important that we get out and make sure that we are counted. Every one of us, everyone in your household, regardless of their citizenship status. This is not tied in any way to any kind of citizenship enforcement activity. I cannot stress that enough. We need to make sure that we get counted. Unfortunately, historically, immigrants, people of color, and, you know, poor people are historically undercounted. All right. So, you know, get the facts, like I say, with everything else. Go online, 2020census.gov, read up on it, find out what it is, find out what it does, understand how it applies to you, and make sure that you get everyone in your household counted. That is crucial. And lastly, and I'm really happy to reinforce this, if you want to communicate with the show, you can email me at firedupradio@yahoo.com. I tweet out on Twitter at @RUFiredUp. That's A-R-E-U, Fired Up. That's on Twitter. And you can also subscribe to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/firedupradio. There's always information there. There's always announcement about upcoming shows. I will also be posting a link to our on-demand archive section here at WJMS, where all of the episodes for the show that have been recorded are now up there in the cloud. You can download and listen, re-listen to any of the shows that we have produced. This is actually our 12th episode, so we are making progress. We're a new show, but we're moving out there. We're gaining. Each week we bring a new show, and these shows are uploaded to our archive on SoundCloud, typically within a week, maybe a little bit more, but, you know, they'll be up there. So if you want to hear the show again, or if you want to hear any of our prior shows, maybe it's something I referenced, you can go to soundcloud.com/WJMSradio/sets/fireitup, and our archive is there. There's also a link to the archive on the WJMSradio.com webpage, so you can also get to it that way. So that's our call to action for this week. Please make sure you get out. Make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure that you've got all your things in order. And if you have comments or questions, reach out to me again at email is firedupradio@yahoo.com. That's all for this week. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Fire It Up. This is Steve. We're on WJMSradio.com. And remember, it takes action to make change. And this, as we have it right now, this country, this is not the America our founders intended. And in order for it to get better, we've got to do what needs to be done. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.